Superman, champion of the oppressed, and the deliverer of the world. His existence to helping those in need. With these words, Superman was introduced to the general public as a new kind of hero, one incapable of any evil and designed specifically to fight the Nazis. When Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster created Superman in 1938, they completely reshaped the way that Western society viewed a hero. Indeed, Superman was no hero. He was in a new category altogether. And the very word created this Superman was a larger-than-life character who could not do anything bad. With this new creation of superhero, the US government, as well as society at large, began viewing their soldiers as this new version of a hero, a way to legitimate the efforts in World War II. This creation by Shuster and Siegel was not only a way for the Jewish writers to join in the fighting, but also helped propagate the American ideals about heroes now defined by superhero traits to future generations. As a culture in the West, we are obsessed with superheroes. Over the last 80 years, depending how old you are, you'll remember Superman, Batman, Aquaman, Keith McElwain, no, the Fantastic Four, X-Men, the Hulk, Captain America, as well as countless others. And I would challenge even to drive past the cinema on the way home today. I would guess that there is some sort of movie that is currently on that has someone who is coming from another world to deliver people who are in real captivity and need rescued. But a little bit more on Siegel and Shuster and the original people behind Superman. They based this superhero figure from the Hebrew Bible. Of all the Jewish heroes from the Hebrew Bible, Samson emerged to them as their leading influence in the creation of Superman. All of the basic attributes of Samson match Superman: his great strength, his birth being heralded from the heavens, his normal parents, and even his weakness that temporarily takes away his strength. In fact, the name Superman comes from the Hebrew word Kel-El, which in a sense means the word for sun. And of course, some of you would know that Superman's strength came from the sun. Superman also had a way that he could be taken down with kryptonite, and so didn't Samson also have a way that he could be taken out through the cutting of his hair. So the authors behind the life and times of Superman were fascinated about someone that would come, in a sense, from the stars. Someone that would be born to normal parents, but would have supernatural powers, that would rescue people from evil and tyranny. And so there's something in the human heart that longs to be rescued. And as you come to church this morning, you might long to be rescued from a particular situation that you're facing at the moment. You might be battling a prevailing sin in your life that you would long to be rescued from. And it's been that way from Genesis chapter 3, verse 15. We've been battling and waging warfare against sin. But thankfully in Genesis chapter 3, God just didn't say, well, I'm finished with mankind. They've disobeyed me. They haven't honored me. They wanted to be God. They wanted to sit on the throne of their lives. From Genesis chapter 3, verse 15, God said that there was going to be a superhuman baby. Someone who was going to come, who was going to wage warfare against the powers of sin and tyranny. So last week we looked at Samson's birth in Judges chapter 13. Born in the most unlikely way to the most unlikely sorts of people. Who would deliver in the most unlikely way. Last week we saw Jesus, the Savior of the world, as Matthew foretold that he would be. Who was born in the most powerful way. Conceived under the power of the Holy Spirit. Born to the most unlikely parents in the most unlikely sort of circumstances. Born in the most unlikely sort of town. Born without a fanfare. But he would be the superhero. Not only that, he would be the God-man who could rescue anyone from their sin who would believe. And so this morning we're going to look at Samson part two. We left it on a little bit of a cliffhanger last week, and I was thinking of entitling this day as really Rambo. Some of you will remember Rambo. This is a little bit X-rated in some ways, this story that we're about to dive into this morning, but I went for a slightly gentler title, that when we're weakest, we're strongest. When we're weakest, we're strongest. In Shakespeare's Hamlet, the lead character says, "Give me that man who is not passion's slave." And as we go through this narrative, Judges chapter 14 and 15, you will see that Samson is passion's slave. And there is a great mystery as we go through this text, because what we see in Judges chapter 13, verse 25, is that the Spirit of God is stirring Samson. In a sense, the Spirit of God is winding Samson up from his lethargy. The Spirit of God is now in Samson's life and is going to help him to do amazing things right before our eyes in Judges chapter 14 and 15. But the amazing thing is as well that Samson is a man, just like you and me. He's full of weaknesses. He's full of uncontrolled passions. And yet there's that great paradox where the writer to the Hebrew people said in Hebrews 11 that he's a hero of the faith. And so as we journey a little bit further with him in this narrative, we can identify with his weaknesses and his struggles, yet we need to seek to be filled with God's Spirit just like he was. So the first thing we see in Judges 14 is God's strength. God's strength. Look at Judges 14, verse 1. Samson went down to Timnah, and he saw there a young Philistine woman. And when he returned, he said to his father and mother, "I have seen a Philistine woman in Timnah. Now get her for me as my wife." His father and mother replied, "Isn't there an acceptable woman among your relatives or among all our people? Must you go to the uncircumcised Philistines to get a wife?" But Samson said to his father, "Get her for me. She is the right one." His parents did not know that this was from the Lord, who was seeking an occasion to confront the Philistines, for at that time they were ruling over Israel. Look what it says in verse 1. Samson went down to Timnah. And there's that great struggle for us when we read and try to interpret the scriptures as to, are there kind of sub-layers of meaning in the text? In the book of John, in the Gospel of John, John often contrasts between darkness and light. And I believe in the book of Judges, in the stories of Samson, the narrator's trying to say something to us about going down. He emphasizes that in this narrative. And in a sense, where Samson currently is in an elevated position. But when he goes down into the Philistine territory, the text says he is going down. And I think they also want to emphasize to us that he is going down spiritually. Unfortunately, Samson is not, while he's filled with the Spirit of God, he is not pursuing God with all of his heart, soul, mind, and strength. He's acting in his flesh. He says to his father and mother, I saw a woman. She's beautiful. One of the Philistine women. She is Mrs. Wright. She's the one for me. And isn't he doing what the book of Judges does time and time again? The people of God were doing what was right in their own eyes. And so Samson is a picture also of Israel at this time. He is doing what he sees is right in his own eyes. He's being led by his own flesh, by his own passions. Yet God is also behind the story trying to work all things together for good. His parents are in this great struggle. Some of you may remember that time when your son or daughter came in to you and said, "You know, I've seen the one for me." I say, "Well, I'm not sure about that person." You're a bit skeptical of them. And the parents in this story are very skeptical of this Philistine woman from Timnah, because in Deuteronomy 7, verse 15, it says this: "Intermarriage with non-Israelites is forbidden by the Lord." And so they're struggling with this. Samson says, "She's the one for me." They know that it's not right for him. They know that in Judges chapter 13, an angel of the Lord, the pre-incarnate Christ, had come and had visited them and said, "This young fellow, Samson, that's going to be born to you, he's to be a Nazarite. To be set apart to the Lord." He's to be pure. He's to be holy. He's to be undefiled. He is to do God's work in God's way for God's people. And we discovered last week that we are also called and set apart by God to do God's work for God in His way and in His timing. Ephesians 2 verse 10, we are created to do good works. But Samson is being controlled by his own flesh. I wonder, can you identify with Samson today? Because we can be very critical of him. You say, look at Judges 13, verse 25. He's filled with the Spirit of God. He's being stirred by the Spirit of God. And yet he seems at times to be going in his own flesh. That could be you this morning. That could be me. When you become a Christian, the Holy Spirit comes upon you and you're baptized into the body of Christ. You're given spiritual gifts. You're born into a spiritual body. And yet you could have been spending this last week living in the passions of your flesh. It's easy to criticize Samson and to avoid ourselves. Look at verse 5 of chapter 14. Listen to what the narrator says again. Samson went down to Timnah, together with his father and mother. As they approached the vineyards of Timnah, suddenly a young lion came roaring toward him. And the Spirit of the Lord came upon him in power, so that he tore the lion apart with his bare hands, as he might have done with a young goat. But he told neither his father nor his mother what he had done. And then he went down and talked with the woman, and he liked her. It's quite a mystery how Samson gets separated from his parents. Some of you know what that's like, to try and keep young 21-month or 22-month-old children in your possession when they want to be everywhere else but your possession. And so Samson, as he's on this journey with his parents down to Timnah, somehow he gets separated from them. And God sends a test to him, just like God sent a test to young David when he was a shepherd boy. And when a lion and a bear came, God gave David the strength to overpower these wild and vicious animals. And it was that act of God working in the life of David that when he came to Goliath, he was able to say, the God who helped me kill the lion and bear is the same God who will help me overcome this Philistine. And so too Samson. I believe God sends this test of a lion. God fills him with his Spirit so that in just a few days' time, he'll be able to take on a greater force in the Philistines. But what about us? Samson here is a car crash waiting to happen. He's doing what is right in his own eyes. He's taking on a lion, but thankfully he's filled with the Spirit of God and he's able to overpower the lion. Is that a little bit of a picture of your life? One moment you're filled with the Spirit of God and you're seeking the things of God. And then the next moment you find yourself being, in a sense, pursued by the passions of your own flesh. It's amazing that God has the strength to change the situation for Samson. Even though at times Samson didn't want to go this next step, God was able to work the situation together in the way that he wanted and in his timing, even though Samson was rebelling. So we see God's strength overruling this situation. But then secondly, we see Samson's weakness and we see our weakness. Look at verse 10. Now his father went down to see the woman, and Samson made a feast there as was customary for bridegrooms. And when he appeared, he was given 30 companions. It's interesting here that the Philistines clearly didn't trust Samson. They gave him 30 companions, so-called friends, so-called wedding guests, really bodyguards. They didn't trust this guy who's come for a Philistine woman. We've heard about this guy Samson, and perhaps rumor had spread about the way that he had dealt with the lion. But it's interesting here in verses 10 and 11, Samson is acting just the way a young Philistine groom would have acted. He is more up for doing what the Philistines would do than what God would have him do. He was supposed to be a Nazarite set apart for God, to be holy and to be different. But here he is following all the rules and principles of being a Philistine. And so he meets with these companions and he doesn't trust them. And so he says, verse 12, "Let me tell you a riddle," Samson said to them. "If you can give me the answer within the 7 days of the feast, I will give you 30 linen garments and 30 sets of clothes. If you can't tell me the answer, you must give me 30 linen garments and 30 sets of clothes." "Tell us your riddle," they said. "Let's hear it." He replied, "Out of the eater, something to eat. Out of the strong, something sweet." For 3 days, they could not give the answer. On the fourth day, they said to Samson's wife, "Coax your husband into explaining the riddle for us, or we will burn you and your father's household to death. Did you invite us here to rob us?" Then Samson's wife threw herself on him, sobbing, "You hate me. You don't really love me. You've given my people a riddle, but you haven't told me the answer." "I haven't even explained it to my father or mother," he replied. "So why should I explain it to you?" She cried the whole 7 days of the feast. I would insert here, "Dear help, Samson." I mean, I know he does a lot of things wrong here, but dear help the man. So on the seventh day, he finally told her, no doubt, because she continued to press him. She in turn explained the riddle to her people. And before sunset on the seventh day, the men of the town explained the riddle. "What is sweeter than honey? What is stronger than a lion?" Samson said to them, "If you had not plowed with my heifer, you would have not solved my riddle." In this battle between God and the powers of darkness, or between Samson, God's representative, and the powers of darkness being the Philistines, they knew where Samson was weak. They knew that this particular woman was his weakness, and so they go to her and they, in a sense, threaten her, "We're going to take you out and your family if you don't find out the riddle for us." And Samson succumbs to the woman's guile. Sounds a little bit like the story of the Bible, even in Adam and Eve's story when they fell in the garden, the guile of the serpent. And so the story, in a sense, takes a twist for the negative here. But Samson, as we've found, is a human like you and me. He has weaknesses, he has struggles. And yet it seems as we make our journey through this narrative, even here, it seems that when he's weakest, that's when he's strongest. That even when he seems to go off in another direction, you say God should have been finished with Samson. He's too far away from God. God could never bring him back. It seems in this story that the great hands that are all over it is God, who is rich in grace and mercy. God whose love never runs out, who is unfailing towards Samson and his people. Israel, who are in a state of apostasy, they love their sin, they love worshipping the gods of sex and the Ashtoreth poles and all kinds of stuff. They love the way they currently are. But God won't give up on them. God is still going to work out his purposes. In their weakness, God was going to make them strong. I love what the Apostle Paul would say about his weaknesses. In 2 Corinthians 12, verse 10, he said this, "That is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weaknesses. I delight in insults. I delight in hardships. I delight in persecutions. I delight in difficulties. For when I am weak, then I'm strong." How countercultural is that? There is no way that this one man, Samson, could have gone down from his home place to Timnah to take on a lion, to then take on the Philistines, and to do what he's going to do right in front of our eyes in this narrative without God being the source of his strength. There's just no way. There's no way in some of the circumstances that you have this morning that you will ever be able to get through to the end of our journey in this life without the strength and the empowerment of God. And then thirdly, God comes in deliverance. God comes in deliverance, verse 19. "Then the Spirit of the Lord came upon him in power. And he went down to Ashkelon and struck down 30 of their men, stripped them of their belongings, and gave their clothes to those who had explained the riddle. Burning with anger, he went up to his father's house, and Samson's wife was given to the friend who had attended him at the wedding. It's hard to reconcile this. Look at verse 19. The Spirit of the Lord came upon Samson, and the next thing that he does is he goes down to Ashkelon and he kills 30 of the Philistines. Hard to reconcile what God is doing here. But the overarching theme of this text is that God won't let go of his people. God won't let go of you this morning. The people of Israel love their sin. They're cohabiting with the Philistines. They're marrying with many different nations all around them, the thing that God had told them explicitly not to do. They love their sin and their idolatry, but in all of what they're doing, God will not leave his people alone. And so what I believe God is doing through Samson is he's picking a fight with the Philistines. God wants to rescue his people from immersing themselves in a sinful culture. He wants to make them separate, and so he sends Samson as his deliverer to go and to start a fight where his people will become separate from the world and the culture which they'd immersed themselves in. So we then see, fourthly, our lethargy with sin. Chapter 15, our lethargy with sin. Look at verse 1. Later on, at the time of wheat harvest, Samson took a young goat and went to visit his wife. He said, "I'm going to my wife's room." But her father would not let him go. "I was sure you thoroughly hated her," he said, "that I gave her to your friend. Isn't her younger sister more attractive? Take her instead." You see, at the last gathering, Samson had stormed off to Ashkelon, gone and killed 30 Philistines. So his father-in-law-to-be thought, surely Samson still doesn't want a Philistine wife. And so he gives Samson's wife away to the best man at the wedding. Samson's not happy. Verse 3. Samson said to them, "This time I have a right to get even with the Philistines. I will really harm them." So he went out and caught 300 foxes. Just pause there. He went out and caught 300 foxes. And he tied them tail to tail in pairs. He then fastened a torch to every pair of tails. I haven't been able to get my head around this in any way, shape, or form, unless God is here. God is the hero here. God is the one who's acting here. God is the one who's got his hands all over this story. Verse 5, he lit the torches and let the foxes loose in the standing grain of the Philistines. He burned up the shocks and the standing grain together with the vineyards and the olive groves. The one thing that's sad about Samson is that he's a one-man band. He's given more power than any other deliverer in the book of Judges. But he wants to do it all on his own. Thankfully, God, who is gracious and kind and loving, gives Samson the power to go out and get these 300 jackals and to tie them together and then send them out at this time of wheat harvest to go and kill all the Philistine grain, which really annoyed them. God is the one who's acting. Verse 6, when the Philistines asked who did this, they were told, "Samson, the Timnite's son-in-law, because his wife was given to his friend." So the Philistines went up and burned her and her father to death. You'll note that was the very thing she wanted to avoid when she found out the riddle in chapter 14. Samson said to them, "Since you've acted like this, I won't stop until I get my revenge on you." And so he attacked them viciously and slaughtered many of them. Then he went down and stayed in a cave in the rock of Etam. Then the Philistines went up and camped in Judah. Philistines aren't happy. Spreading out near Lehi. The men of Judah asked, "Why have you come to fight us?" "We have come to take Samson prisoner," they answered, "to do to him as he did to us." Then 3,000 men from Judah went down to the cave in the rock of Etam and said to Samson, Don't you realize that the Philistines are rulers over us? What have you done to us? He answered, I merely did to them what they did to me. They said to Samson, we have come to tie you up and hand you over to the Philistines. Samson said, swear to me that you won't kill me yourselves. Agreed, they answered, we only want to tie you up and hand you over to them. We will not kill you. So they bound him with two new ropes and led him up from the rock. There's now an international crisis. The people of God had been cohabiting with the Philistines very happily. They were, in a sense, interwoven with all the other nations. But now they have the Philistines on their territory, ready to start a war. But this is the first time we see the people of God move from lethargy. They've actually mustered an army. But it's not an army against the forces of darkness. It's an army against their own person. Why? They love their sin. They wanted to remain in the same position. They didn't want God to do anything different in their lives. And as I reflected on that, I thought about myself. Are there certain sin issues in my life that the only time I get kind of ready to do something about is when someone wants to take that away? And so then I muster up strength to fight against it. Because this is exactly what the people are doing. They're so lethargic to the things of God. But when somebody wants to take away something that they love more than God, they're now ready to fight. They're ready actually to hand over the one person who can give them hope. But then finally, God will deliver them again. God will come in his grace and deliver them again. Verse 14. As he approached Lehi, the Philistines came toward Samson shouting. But the Spirit of the Lord came upon him in power. The ropes on his arms became like charred flax and the bindings dropped from his hands. And finding a fresh jawbone of a donkey, he grabbed it and struck down 1,000 men. Then Samson said, with a donkey's jawbone, I've made donkeys of them. With a donkey's jawbone, I have killed 1,000 men. When he had finished speaking, he threw away the jawbone and the place was called Ramath Lehi. But look how the story finishes. Because he was very thirsty, he cried out to the Lord. You've given your servant this great victory. Must I now die of thirst and fall into the hands of the uncircumcised? Then God opened up the hollow place in Lehi and water came out of it. When Samson drank, his strength returned and was revived. And so the spring was called En Hakor, and it is still there in Lehi. Samson led Israel for 20 years in the days of the Philistines. There's no doubt that when Samson was weakest, then he was made strong. Every time when it seemed as if his passions would overpower him and that he would go off track, God was able to direct him in a certain way so that his purposes would be accomplished. I wonder about your situation this morning. Do you believe that when you're weakest, you're strongest? Can you identify with the Apostle Paul? And he says, I delight in weaknesses. I delight in insults. I delight in persecutions. For when I am weak, then I am strong. And for those of us today who feel weary and broken and run down, immersed in sin, lethargic to the things of God, ready to give up on life itself, God didn't send Samson for us. He sent another deliverer called Jesus. Tragically, Samson's own people, Judah, betrayed him. But what about Jesus as he washed the feet of the disciples and he looked into the eyes of Judas in the upper room and he knew that in just a few hours' time, he would be handed into the hands of sinful men because Judas, one of his own, would betray him. Tragically, Samson was bound and led away by his own people appearing helpless. But what about Jesus? As he moves into the Garden of Gethsemane and there is Judas marching towards him with the Roman guards and with the Jewish leaders not far behind him. And Judas greets Jesus, our deliverer, with a kiss and hands him over into the hands of sinful men. Tragically, Samson was left as one man against a nation because he was betrayed by his own people. But what about Jesus, as all the disciples abandoned him around the cross and he was left as one man to face all the powers of sin and darkness? Little did Caiaphas know when he said in John chapter 11 verse 50, "You do not realize that it is better for you that one man die for the people than for the whole nation to perish." Amazingly, next week we'll find out that Samson would die bringing down the temple and killing many Philistines with him. In doing so, Samson brought permanent alienation between the cultures, and so Israel would be distinct, no longer living in sin with the Philistines. But what about Jesus? As he hung alone on the cross and tackled the powers of Satan, Colossians 2 verse 15, and having disarmed the powers of darkness and the authorities, he made a public spectacle of them, triumphing over them on the cross. The picture is of Samson as he will be beside two pillars and he brings down the temple. Jesus, when he hung on the cross with his arms outstretched, he would now say that the temple of God is now within us. And that he wouldn't be a temporary deliverer. You see, next week when you find out when Samson gives up his life, there was peace for 20 years. But when Jesus Christ gave up his life on the cross, when he was at his weakest point, when it looked as if he was defeated, when it looked as if the lights had gone out, that was when he was strongest. Because the Father was there. And he was reconciling the world unto himself. When Samson died, his reign was over. But we this morning worship Christ who's ruling and reigning. And he wants to help you this morning. For those of you that feel weak and burdened and heavy laden, he wants to come and minister to you.